Hello, and welcome to the second episode of the global edition of Awin Talks, the affiliate marketing podcast. I'm your host, Rob Davidson, and I'm joined once again by my colleagues, Kevin Edwards.
Hello.
And Craig Foster.
Hello.
And we'll be discussing all of the latest news from across the global affiliate industry. In this month's edition of Awin Talks, I'll be talking to a trio of colleagues with extensive experience of working on affiliate programs across different markets. And we'll be discussing strategies and tips of things to be aware of when you're operating affiliate programs in a variety of regions simultaneously. I'll also be having a quick chat with our new global product marketing manager to find out more about his role and a couple of new updates from the team there, including Awin's new voucher attribution tool and also the network's response to Apple's ITP tracking change, which occurred recently or was announced recently. We'll also be giving you a rundown of events and content to look out for in the coming weeks. Before all that, though, it's time to do a quick review of what's been catching the eye of the strategy and business intelligence teams in the industry recently. So, Craig, you spent the last couple of weeks stateside out in our Baltimore office, haven't you?
Yeah, I have.
And how was that trip?
Very hot. Yeah, I definitely didn't pack well.
Really?
No. But it was really good, yeah. Enjoyable.
So what news, I did kind of ask you whilst you were out there, just to kind of pay attention to what was making waves in the industry news out there and report back what your findings were. What did you find?
Yeah. So there was actually quite an interesting ruling made while I was over there by the Supreme Court. So effectively what they've done is they've changed, they've overruled an old ruling that was made back in 1992 around what's called the Nexus tax. So the implications of this can be quite large for small businesses anyway, and I'll come on to why that is. Firstly, though, I suppose it's worth explaining a little bit about what a Nexus tax is, mm-hmm. Because I suppose those of you outside of the US perhaps won't know. A Nexus in tax terms is kind of like an agent or a connection, and effectively what the original ruling did was it said that there would have to be like a physical presence in a state for someone to collect sales tax. Now what this does, this actually says, as it stands, what this means is that there doesn't necessarily have to have that physical presence anymore. So it's been overturned, which means that those states that currently don't charge sales tax on connections and in our case, affiliates.
And there's a few, aren't there, that don't charge it until the new ruling?
Yeah, so I'm actually not sure on the exact numbers. Off the top of my head, I think it's like 30 states that do.
Yeah.
So there are a number that can now change that as well. Of course, this does mean that those states now will have to pass legislation accordingly. And we are in, I believe we're in recess there. So once they come back to the kind of legislative calendar, they will then change that quite quickly, I would imagine. But what this actually means, so I suppose for affiliates at the moment, what you have is a system by where a merchant perhaps won't want to work with a certain affiliate by, you know, with the traffic that they're driving and where they're based. Mm-hmm. That will undoubtedly change now.
So previously, if an affiliate was based in one of the states where this Nexus tax was being enforced, that was then being used as justification by the advertiser for kind of...
I believe so, yes. Yeah, that is the case.
Culling the program.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And there has been cases in the past
right.
Where that has been prevalent.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, while that will... I mean, obviously, in kind of the headlines of all of this, this is affecting small businesses because they're going to have to, you know, they're going to be implementing, especially tech-wise as well, they're going to have to implement a lot of changes to kind of meet these tax laws in these areas. And with differences of sales tax in different areas, you're going to have to then apply it. You know, there's platforms like Etsy and Amazon that have third-party sellers, which are going to now, they're going to have to be accounted for with this. And so that's kind of where the headlines are hitting. In terms of affiliates, though, you know, I mean, that's it's a change that could be beneficial in the sense that, you know, those old kind of ways of not working with affiliates might well change. And so we're putting out some guidance on that.
Yeah.
I suppose other areas of this as well is this could affect, I mean, we don't really have the issue here when it comes to online taxes because of VAT. Mm-hmm. And in other countries in Europe as well, they have that kind of same system. So obviously VAT is charged on those items online. But there are things like business rates in the UK, which aren't necessarily applied to online merchants. And so that may well come into effect. I mean, there has been talk in the UK Parliament, at least, from a lot of MPs about introducing something that would counteract that. Because obviously, with the way retail is kind of declining over the years and online is kind of taking over in some areas.
In terms of the diminishing of the high street presence.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, you could see a fight back there from, you know, especially small businesses that would have to compete with the online world mm-hmm. and have to pay things like business rates, whereas the online world doesn't. And so you could see a move in other markets as well in that area. I'm not too sure about outside the UK, but I do know that there are, you know, quite major discussions going on. Legislatively around that, yeah.
So it could be one to kind of keep our eye on for 2019.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So, Kev, since the last podcast, which was released amidst GDPR coming into force, there's been a data privacy legal ruling that could have ramifications for affiliate marketing. Can you explain a bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. So actually, there have been two now, because I found one literally about an hour ago, but which I will touch on very briefly at the end. But this, what specifically I wanted to talk about, because I think this is probably the most significant from a general affiliate marketing perspective. And it's last month the European Union Court of Justice ruled on a German court case. It actually dates back to 2011, but it's taken all this time, I'm assuming, to get to the final arbitration of the European Court. And it, obviously, it's framed within the general context of GDPR and e-privacy. And this was a particular case, and there's lots of information out there, and it's quite detailed. So I'm going to try and kind of keep it quite top level. But what happened was that the ruling supported a data protection authority based in Germany about a specific case with a local university that had its own Facebook fan page. And what the ruling stated was that they were actually a data controller jointly with Facebook. So the data protection authority said the university was in breach because they didn't inform visitors to that fan page that they used cookies to track them and that they stored their data and they could potentially use that data for other purposes as well. And just to quote from the judgment, it said the court finds that an administrator such as this university must be regarded as a data controller jointly responsible with Facebook for the processing of that data. And it also really emphasized the concept of consent, in needing consent in order to track consumers as well. So it's a potentially quite a significant ruling for a number of reasons. As we know, affiliates generally make use of fan pages to drive affiliate revenue. So this ruling could effectively put them in the same boat. Now, affiliates that do make use of sort of social media platforms and Facebook, etc., they obviously have limited control over that technology in a way that voucher code sites, cashback sites, etc., don't, because they typically will, certainly the larger ones, will have built or configured their own proprietary software. So they're kind of placed in a situation where they don't really have control. They can't dictate to Facebook about what they need to do in order to be compliant. Facebook also fought against this, saying that they effectively thought of themselves as a data processor. They just facilitated the tech. They didn't really have any control over how that tech was used. They actually responded. They said inevitably they're disappointed with the ruling. Again, to quote from the ruling, or to quote from what Facebook said, they said, businesses across Europe use internet services like Facebook to reach new customers and grow. While there will be no immediate impact on the people and businesses who use Facebook services, we will work to help our partners understand its implications.
I guess it's quite difficult from, if you're looking back at kind of the network's response to this current situation, it's quite difficult to offer any definitive advice in this regard.
Yeah, we have had a few inquiries come through. I know the publisher team I've been speaking to the publisher team about this in the UK, and we have had a couple of affiliates that do make use of Facebook in particular, asking us what they need to do in order to be compliant. And you know, that we're placed in a situation where we can't really offer any advice, legally can't really offer any advice because, you know, we don't necessarily know. But also they, as I say, they don't really have control over that tech. You know, they can't, as I say, go and demand that Facebook put together a specific set of terms and conditions or remove certain elements of tracking or personalization. So they're certainly placed in quite a tricky situation. I think that this is an important ruling, and I think that we will see a lot more of them. Mm.
I guess it's gone some way to, if you're looking at Awin's perspective again, and the route that Awin took in light of GDPR in being a joint controller, which did kind of cause, I guess, some consternation amongst the kind of like wider affiliate community. And there was a bit of confusion from different messaging that was coming out of different kind of parties within the industry around how they were approaching it. But that's perhaps validated that position to a certain extent.
I think it, you know, it's not necessarily that we take sort of satisfaction out of it, but we're all trying to find our way through what is a complicated new piece of legislation that puts quite specific requirements on businesses that operate with personal data. And realistically, what we had to do was approach it from the perspective of what would a data protection authority consider us to be. And regardless of what we feel that someone could be construed as, we went down the route that we thought that affiliates and advertisers are joint controllers of that data with us in a kind of tripartite relationship. Mm-hmm. And so I think it does validate that. As I say, over time, we will see more rulings which will inform that. It might be that our position changes or alters slightly over time. It's only when we have those kind of legal precedents sort of filtering through that we will be able to kind of refine potentially our position.
So obviously with all that in mind then, what's happened in terms of this initial ruling? What do you think currently anyway the long-term implications might be for
well,
this?
Well, I think everything now is obviously going to be framed. This is framed against GDPR, so we kind of have to take this as a useful piece of guidance. Mm-hmm. We're still waiting. We know post May the 25th that immediately investigations kind of started into Facebook and Google. We know that those kind of big monolithic, that duopoly, if you like, are companies that are going to be heavily scrutinized, and we're still waiting for that. But I mentioned at the start that I'd just seen an additional ruling, which only came out this week, and it's actually the first post-GDPR ruling that we've seen. And again, it was in Germany. And I think it's a reasonably detailed case. Just for the interest of time, I would just sort of effectively sort of try and crystallize it by saying that it related to whether the data captured by a non-profit organization was done so on a legal basis of legitimate interest. So another company had outsourced some work and had asked this other company to collect certain amounts of data, which they hadn't previously done. And this company pushed back and said that they didn't think they needed to because they hadn't been asked to before, and they couldn't see that actually how it related to the services that this company offered. Mm-hmm. And the German ruling backed that company. And effectively, what I think this illustrates is that, A, both non-for-profit and for-profit organizations will come under scrutiny, will be assessed equally. But it's also a reminder that businesses should both assess and document why the personal data they collect and process is necessary for a specific, and in this case, legitimate, because that's legitimate interest, because that's the legal basis they use for processing data. And also another thing they made reference to was also the core GDPR principle of data minimization as well. So
what were the data points? Did they actually say at all what data points they were?
They did actually. They just off the top of my head, it related to specific contact details for a technical person within the businesses whose data they were collecting. They said that they needed to collect that data in order, should there be an issue arise or should they need to contact them about something specifically technical, they needed that data. And the company said that they hadn't been asked to record that data in the past, and they didn't think that it was a requirement of the a condition of the service or a condition of the agreement. And as I say, the German law, the German DPA in this instance, upheld their objection to collecting this data.
Mm.
Well, that'd be one to also keep an eye on over the coming weeks and months.
Yeah, and these will start filtering through now. Yeah. And I think that, as I say, as the months progress, we'll have a much clearer idea about what good practice or kind of how to navigate this new legislation.
Mm. It's only a matter of time, isn't it, until a defining one comes through.
Yeah, absolutely. From my perspective, just to round things off between us, I wanted to give a quick mention to the AWIN conference that was held in London just last month. So every year we look to host a big conference in the UK where publishers, brands, agencies and all of our network partners can come together to meet face to face and hear some interesting talks around the industry from a wide variety of speakers. This year's edition was called the Affiliate Code, and there was something of a flexible structure to the event's proceedings for this particular event. So we had a series of keynotes with quite general themes in the morning session, and that was followed by a diverse afternoon sequence that split things out into three different tracks that had quite specific focuses, and that meant that attendees could organise a tailored itinerary according to their own individual interests. So, for instance, if you were a fashion brand or publisher, you could go and watch our account director, Joelle Hillman, talking about evolving fashion trends across the network over the last few years. You also got a chance to see some entertaining pictures of her own former fashion faux pas, which was pretty funny. There was also another session for if your focus was more on the telecom sector, then fellow account directors Pete James and Alex Palmer-Yee did a talk that provided an insightful overview on changing consumer trends relating to mobile contracts. And it also considered the impact that the coming 5G revolution might have on that particular market as well. Earlier that morning, we heard about huge technology megatrends, courtesy of Jeremy White, one of Wired's journalists. There was an extensive GDPR interview by Kev with AWIN's legal counsel, Eitan Yankelowitz.
That'll do.
Yeah,
it's good
enough. All right, that'll do. And that was followed by a presentation from Business Insider that touched upon how they're coping as a publisher amid all of the current challenges around online monetization. And that was actually a theme that I touched upon in the final keynote session when I presented a talk with the fairly dubious title of Why Affiliate Marketing Can Save the Internet. So, admittedly, it was a bit of a clickbaity statement designed to provoke a bit of interest from the audience. It was obviously just before the lunch break, so I needed to do something to galvanise interest.
You didn't do yourself any favours by coming out with that as a title.
Do you not think? No. Now you tell me. But I wanted to put across what I think, anyway, are some pretty compelling arguments for why the affiliate model is one that's well suited to navigating a lot of the issues that the online ad industry is currently mired in. And I think when you look at some of the issues plaguing the wider industry right now, issues around measurement, around return on investment, ad fraud, an overly complicated and opaque ad tech system made up of lots of various intermediaries, the invasion of individuals' privacy, as we've just touched upon, you can see how a solid case for affiliate marketing can really be made, I think. It's far more direct, far more transparent, has an enormous amount of control and transparency when done correctly. And it's interested in very little personal information that might be actually considered invasive. And taken all together, my point was that it offers a great solution for advertisers, publishers and users for online advertising, which can still help to foster a free and open web without resorting to paywalls or other restrictive monetization methods.
Yeah, I think... The point you made during the presentation was quite clear as well around the fact that, you know, essentially in affiliate marketing for years we have been kind of putting information out there to kind of prove its worth. I think occasionally affiliate marketing does get a bad rep from certain areas, and I don't think that's justified. So it was quite good to see actually quite the defense of it. Again, it kind of goes back as well. We discussed it before around some kind of. Some people in the industry want to change the name of affiliate marketing and move towards another change in terms of what we call it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think for the fact that where we are now as an industry, certainly in the UK, I think it's fine to keep it as it is in that sense. Obviously, we have to keep kind of proving our worth in certain areas, but as a channel, we do that quite well.
Mm-hmm. I think that it's a really interesting. For the past few years, we've seemed to have been talking about industries at a crossroads. And I think that we know that the industry is evolving at different rates in different markets, but I think it also operates in at different rates within businesses within those markets. So we internally have been talking about, you know, with the crossroads around the whole kind of move towards measuring value rather than just volume, capturing additional data points. And actually, I think that potentially the opportunity is there to kind of really go back to basics and just really, really reiterate, even if it is just focusing on the volume piece, which, you know, we captured X, Y, and Z, it's all measurable on a spreadsheet and the ROI is very easy to work out. Yes, on a top level, and then you can get into those more complex conversations further on down the line. But I think that there's a huge opportunity. I mean, we have been talking about it for a while now, but it seems to be really crystallized in this kind of new age of data privacy, data minimization, with the kind of moves by Apple, who you mentioned earlier, who I know you can speak to Ed about. I know this, you can speak to Ed about this issue, you know, about what data is captured, and also, you know, this kind of whole push, this whole drive by companies to be a lot more transparent. And I think that it's a huge opportunity out there for us to do. We just need to make sure that we get a really compelling message that is easily broadcast to as wide an audience as possible.
I think as well is that perhaps one of the areas where we, you know, that isn't shouted about enough within affiliates is what a gateway it is for small businesses. You know, other marketing channels and revenue streams simply aren't as easy to get into and then start generating actual revenue from the traffic that comes to your site. I think that, you know, it's and perhaps not really, perhaps there's a research piece that could be done around it, but the amount of, you know, small businesses this channel facilitates, it needs, you know, that's always going to be needed, regardless of what payment structure you look at.
Yeah. So we ended up actually having a really great turnout for the conference. There was around 300 attendees, I think, that came on the day. However, for those of you that are listening that couldn't make it along, if you still want to get a feel for the day, there was a highlights video that the events team have put together, and you can check that out for yourself via AWIN's YouTube channel right now. We'll also be shortly publishing a new white paper based heavily upon that talk that I mentioned earlier, Why Affiliate Marketing Can Save the Internet. So keep your eyes peeled for that one too. And if you'd like to hear more about any of the talks that were featured on the day, then please do let us know. So for the main interview today, we're going to be recreating a panel session from the Affiliate Code conference that I was just talking about. One of the more popular sessions that was hosted that day was called Globalization: Breaking Boundaries. And in it, we heard views from across our account management teams who have experience and expertise in managing affiliate programs in a wide variety of regions across the globe. Now, affiliate marketing is a channel that has a universal mechanism in the CPA model, but it has a huge degree of variety in how that model is implemented and utilized in different markets around the world, which is both a part of its appeal, but can also sometimes make it appear quite complex as well. So to help clear up some of that complexity and to shed light on a variety of those different markets, I have sitting with me right now Catherine Casey, Account Director for our Global Account Management Team.
Hello.
Hi. We've also got Liv Skinner, Team Leader in our UK team, who has also recently returned from working out of our Australian office.
Hi.
Hi, Liv. And finally, Charlotte Tweddle, one of our Global Account Managers, who has specialised in managing accounts in the wider DACH region and specifically Germany.
Hi, yes. Hi.
So thanks for joining me today, guys. And I wanted to kick off with you, Liv, because you very recently came back from working out in Australia and you've worked in both the UK and the Australian markets. And so I guess I kind of wanted to find out what the biggest immediate differences that you noticed between those two regions and locations was.
I went over to the Australian office for 6 months secondment to sort of help out with things in our new office out there. There's obviously quite a few big differences between the countries. First of all, in Australia, the population is around 24.5 million, and that's almost three times smaller than that of the UK, even though the country itself is about 32 times bigger. Just to give you an idea of the scope of the country, which I didn't really grasp until I moved out there, it takes about 10 hours to drive from Sydney to Brisbane, even though both those cities are on the East Coast, and it's about 9 hours to Melbourne from Sydney in the opposite direction as well. There's obviously a number of difficulties which arise from having a landmass of that scale. First thing which I found really interesting is that delivery propositions aren't even across the country. So about 89% of the population resides within urban centres. And the delivery propositions are really good in these so-called metro areas, but they can differ really greatly across the country. So just because an advert for a product is shown on national TV, it doesn't actually mean that it's available nationally.
So I could be kind of looking up a product or an advert I might be watching in one city, but actually it's only available within another one that's kind of hundreds of miles away.
Yeah, that's right. So I remember watching at TV in Sydney where I was living and scrolling across the bottom for, like, this is like a national sort of household brand, and scrolling across the bottom of the TV, it was saying now available in Adelaide. And Adelaide's the fifth biggest city in Sydney. I guess I don't know what the fifth biggest city in the UK is, but that's like watching it in London and not being able to buy it in, you know, Birmingham or something like that. So, yeah, so that's quite different from the UK. They also have relatively slow broadband internet speeds. It ranks about the 50th fastest in the world, but they actually have really good mobile internet speeds. So the lifestyle out there, because of the weather, leans much more heavily towards outdoorsy activities. So people are always at the beach, out and about, having brunch, doing outdoor sports. And it means that people are much more inclined to use their mobile devices to surf the web. And actually about 27% of affiliate transactions now take place via a smartphone.
So, I mean, how do those kinds of factors, how do they influence e-commerce and affiliate trends out there as well?
So, in general, I'd say that the landscape, the digital landscape, is far less mature than it is here in the UK. Only around half of Australia's retail businesses have an online presence. And from my personal experience, I don't find that they offer the best sort of online shopping experience overall. And in fact, most prominent brands don't actually have affiliate programs yet. Oh, potentially not most. A lot of them don't have affiliate programs yet. It's not sort of a given over there at the moment. And overall, that kind of creates an opportunity for digitally savvy alternatives to really get into the market over there by providing this overall better experience.
Yeah. So I guess, I mean, one of the things that we saw, I think, in research in the Omen report was around the activity and reach of some of the global publishers that have broken into that market. So do you think that is a factor for them having some success out there, that they're a bit more kind of savvy or a bit more kind of developed in that degree?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you do have quite a few, there's some sort of native publishers that are quite big names out there. So you've got the likes of Cash Rewards, who are Australia's version of Quidco, that are really big. Around 2% of all online retail spend actually goes via Cash Rewards, which is obviously huge. Finder.com.au is Australia's largest comparison site. It's kind of their version of Money Saving Expert. They're on national TV adverts and they've got their own jingle. They're pretty big as well. They're also expanding into other countries.
How does that jingle go?
You don't want to hear me sing, honestly. There's Ozbargain, who is kind of Australia's version of Hot UK Deals. They receive over 3.5 million visits a month, so often placed as one of the top 10 websites in Australia for traffic. So these are all quite well-known names, but then if you look at the general publisher mix of like the top 10, say, for a lot of programs, you do see some global players in there as quite big performers. So the likes of RewardStyle, Retail Me Not, Global Savings Group, ShopStyle, Coupon Nation, and this has really also meant that Awin have been able to leverage those existing publisher relationships and help expansion in that territory and grow the overall Australian publisher base.
So Awin doesn't have a dedicated office as such out in Australia, does it? So you were working in collaboration with Commission Factory.
Yeah.
So how does that partnership work and who are Commission Factory?
So Commission Factory are Australia's largest native network, and essentially we have a strategic partnership with them. So Awin do have their own account management team on the ground out there, but we do share Commission Factory's offices, and we have this exclusive partnership with them whereby we collaborate, and Commission Factory operate under their own publisher ID on the Awin network. So they'll work as a sub-network operating their huge base of publishers under that one ID. So that means that in Awin reporting, you'd see their sales via Commission Factory as you would another sub-network. But when an advertiser joins Commission Factory to their program, they're also given full access to their platform, which is really user-friendly. Always get feedback from publishers and advertisers alike to say how intuitive and just really easy to use their platform is. which means that you get full visibility on where those sales are coming from. But obviously, most importantly, is we work really closely with the team out there. So as I said, we share offices, we share publisher opportunities, we collaborate on new business, and it really allows us to extend our clients' reach throughout Australia and APAC and kind of capitalise on their local expertise. Mm.
So I know that Commission Factory have also just opened up an office in Singapore. I was wondering whether or not you had maybe any insights to share relating to that wider APAC market beyond kind of the borders of Australia.
Yeah, so I mean, most of my experience was mainly in the Sydney office, but I'd say that APAC, just like all other markets, has its own idiosyncrasies and nuances. That's when compared with like the UK, Germany, the US, but also within APAC itself. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that encompasses a huge variety of countries. There's differences within the publisher mix. So, for example, as much as I said, Cash Rewards does track a lot of the Australian sort of online retail spend, it is really the only cashback site out there. Cashback in general in Australia isn't that prominent, whereas that prominence increases as you extend through the wider APAC region. There's actually quite a few cashback sites originating there that are trying to break into the Australian market even more. There's also different online retail events depending on which country you're looking at. So, for example, Click Frenzy is a huge in Australia that takes place at the beginning of November. Mm. And then,
what is Click Frenzy?
So Click Frenzy is an online shopping event which takes place over 24 hours. It was launched in 2012 by a publisher of the same name. So I think actually the name Click Frenzy has now been trademarked. So a lot of other publishers get involved, but they aren't able to use the term Click Frenzy. So they have to do something else, Frenzy. But basically, it's a period of 24 hours, and brands offer a really huge discount, kind of like what you sort of see people offering around Black Friday here is like their biggest offer that they have over the year. Mm. And it's really established itself as kind of the country's biggest online shopping extravaganza. People go mad for it. And then obviously we've got other events like China's Singles Day, which has really started to break out of the domestic borders. Again, it really varies by brand, but we didn't see as strong performance overall in Singles Day as we did for Click Frenzy for Australian in Australia. Mm. But then when you look at other APAC countries, Singles Day is by far the biggest revenue driving day of the year. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks, Liv. I wanted to move then back from the APAC region and over to Europe. So, Catherine, can you take us through your experience with the German market?
Yeah, sure. So in contrast to what we were talking about with Australia, Germany is one of the larger and more mature of the affiliate markets. So Awin, our HQ is actually based in Berlin. And then since we merged with AffiliNet, which I think was August last year, we also now have offices in Munich and Hanover. So we've got a really large and established account management team there as well. In terms of my personal experience, so I'm part of the global Awin account management team. And we manage advertisers which are active across multiple regions for Awin. So one of our team's aims is to help advertisers launch into new markets. So we've got experience of working across all of the main European territories, Germany, France, Netherlands, Scandinavia. And we work closely with all of those account management and publisher teams. So we really understand sort of the market differences, the publisher mixes, the trends. So we can really help guide advertisers into those new markets. What we typically tend to see is when a UK brand is first launching into new territories, it will normally be Germany and France really as the ones that they go into first. So
simply because of their size.
Yeah, definitely. And they're definitely probably the most similar, I would say, in terms of the UK affiliate market. So yeah, they're probably where we have the most experience, I would say, out of all of the territories.
So when we're looking specifically at that German market, because I know a lot of your experience tends to kind of have focused in that particular region, what were kind of some of the more interesting stats or insights that you found?
So I guess for me, I think what's quite interesting is that it is a really large economic territory, and Germany sits just behind the UK in terms of their active e-com penetration rate. So really quite similar in that respect. But what is quite interesting is that Germany, as well as Austria and Switzerland, the DACH region, were quite slow to adopt a digital-first culture in some way. So consumers and retailers were a little bit more guarded to begin with than perhaps some of the other EU nations. And I think that's always something to consider and bear in mind when you're launching an affiliate program, specifically in the DACH region. And you can see that in a couple of ways. So where Liv mentioned about 27% of affiliate sales are via mobile in Australia. That sits at only 13% in Germany. So considering it's such a large and mature affiliate market, you can kind of see how they are a little bit, I guess, behind in that sense, a little bit more guarded with how they're using mobile. Same with like social media usage. So it's comparatively low in comparison to other regions. So about half of the German internet users are actively engaging with social media, and that's about sits at 70% for the UK. So that also kind of influences the types of affiliates that work really well in Germany as well.
So one of the trends I think that we've seen from the German market in the past is around like the lower cross-border kind of experience there. What do you think the reasons for that might be?
Yeah, so I think this is a really interesting point actually about the German market, and I think it's always something that brands should consider when they're launching a program there, because it's not necessarily something you might expect from such a large and established affiliate market. I think there are a few factors at play. One is that Germany have really established e-com sites in place for their homegrown brands. So a consumer doesn't really feel the need to necessarily seek out foreign brands and shop on their websites. And then you can see that in reverse. So Austria and Switzerland, they actually have a really high cross-border shopping rate. And that is because there's been a low level of investment from their brands, their local brands. So yeah, the consumer has needed to look elsewhere. There's also a couple of other factors which I think are really important. So it's the German consumer's concern of security on personal information on payment platforms. So consumers just naturally feel safer paying with cash, and then for e-commerce, probably more cash on delivery of those items. So they're a bit more trusting of local retailers because they're really confident that they can return those products easily, especially if they're ordering quite a few of them. And that's something I always advise brands when they're launching into Germany, just to think about their returns methods and how easy that is to facilitate, because it's something that can that really does affect the consumer and how the market works. Delivery charges are also really important. So 29% of German consumers stated that long and expensive delivery was the single most important factor for them not buying cross-border. So again, something really important to consider when you're first entering that market, just to make sure your website has all of that up to date and is really optimized for it. But there is good news, and the cross-border rate is growing again in Germany, and that's mainly just due to the German consumer wanting more products, a bigger range of products, and also at a lower price. So they're needing to kind of look outside of their home brands in order to do that.
Yeah, and from a publisher perspective as well, what does the kind of makeup look like in the German market? Is it distinctly different from the UK or from other markets?
So it definitely used to be, I would say, but it has diversified a lot over the last year or so. So voucher sites definitely do still dominate the market, and I think that's the biggest kind of trend that we see, and it's probably something that I would say UK brands take away the most when they're launching into Germany. They're quite conscious that it is a very voucher-dominated market. But the top 10 of an average retail program now is definitely starting to diversify a bit. That even is with voucher sites themselves. So say the likes of Sparvelt, so they're the largest and one of the first voucher sites to launch into Germany. And they have incredible reach, and I guess you would say they're more than just a voucher site alone. They run like cross-channel campaigns, they do TV exposure, they collaborate with media houses. So the exposure and reach that you can get from working with these guys is huge. So yeah, definitely something to bear in mind when you're launching into that market, and how you view voucher sites. They are, I guess, more than that, particularly in Germany, where they're almost brands in their own right. In terms of other sort of verticals that work, so cashback and loyalty are really important as well. Again, a little bit more behind. So Shoop is the leading cashback site. They're part of Quidco. And they've grown massively in the last 3 years. But they've also kind of got in there at the right time as cashback and the use of cashback has grown in Germany. So yeah, they've definitely got in there at a good time. They definitely have, I'd say, the leading market share for cashback. And loyalty as well works really well. Again, mainly dominated by the loyalty points publisher Payback. So they are a points-based loyalty system, and you get a Payback card, so you can collect points online and offline, and they have 30 million active users in Germany alone. And I think it's like 8 out of 10 Germans know the name Payback. Yeah. So you can just imagine just by getting signed up with this one affiliate, the reach and brand awareness you can get in Germany is huge just from that site alone. Yeah. In terms of other verticals, editorial and content has definitely been a lot slower to grow. Mm. And we've seen that across all of the different territories in Europe. And it's always something that a UK brand really wants to make sure is included in their strategy, is their sort of editorial and content push. But it is a little bit limited in Germany with the amount of sites that work really well. It tends to be just a really small handful that work well. There's not an exhaustive sort of blogger list, mm-hmm. Which is something we tend to get asked for. And it tends to be actually as well some of the really niche sites that work really well, like a sporting website. I'm not going to say the name because I'll probably butcher it in German, that work really well. Same with influencers. A lot of them still run through Rewards Style or the local influencer network, which is Blogfoster, rather than signing up directly onto Awin. But yeah, overall, it's definitely diversified. But again, they're almost brands in their own right, some of these publishers. So you really need some budget and to get tenancies in order to book some good exposure with them. It can be a little bit trickier to negotiate, I would
say.
Yeah,
sure. So Charlotte, I know that you are working still with the brand Superdry, who launched into the German market and have really, obviously your role has kind of involved helping them to engage with those German publishers and that wider German audience. I wondered if you could kind of talk a little bit about how that was done and what you learned about the German market from that experience as well.
Yeah, sure. So Superdry have actually been on the network since 2012, so for quite a long time. But last year, they really took a key focus into the German market, which came as a result of an internal study that they ran, which showed that there was a really large disparity between the UK and the German consumer brand awareness, specifically on their jackets range. So having taken that information on board, they wanted to focus a lot of their last year's attention on developing the German market and improving their brand awareness out there. That was primarily achieved in three ways. So first of all was building local relationships. So Awin host a multitude of local expert days throughout the course of the year in different key markets. And Superdry have been very responsive. They've attended and also sponsored a lot of these events and really taken advantage of having the opportunity to meet those publishers on a face-to-face basis and develop opportunities more personally as opposed to just via email. Secondly, they've worked on a lot of cross-channel placements. So as Catherine was talking about with Sparvelt, they worked with them during a jackets campaign, not just as a voucher code site, but also more on an editorial basis. So they did their usual kind of exposure placements, but they also ran a really strong editorial campaign for Superdry, which was really, really successful. And considering that the promotion, there wasn't actually a promotion, there was no incentive, there was no discount, it was purely brand awareness led. The results were really positive, so that was another thing that they kind of utilised to their advantage. And finally, Superdry have been very canny in leveraging local shopping events, so taking on knowledge from Awin and understanding when key shopping events take place over the year within the different markets. They've taken that understanding and made sure that they've got strong promotions going for that day so that they can really optimize on those specific points in time. So for example, with Glamour Shopping Day in Germany, they really took advantage of that.
Glamour Shopping Day?
Yeah.
Okay, so that isn't an event where everyone dresses glamorously.
Yeah,
and go
they
shopping.
Just go out, kick a foot on their heels. No, so it's a big shopping event that takes place every year. It's in conjunction with the magazine Glamour. And
I've heard of that.
Yeah, you know that one, your fave. And it's spread over a few days, 2 or 3 days, so not a very long period of time. And it's a really big opportunity to market any strong promotions. So Superdry last year ran a 20% off discount code, which was promoted through all the major German affiliates, and the results were really amazing. They had a revenue growth of 1,460% year on year. So it just goes to show that having that understanding of the market and knowing those key dates can really further your program.
Cool. Well, thanks for that. I guess in conclusion, I guess I wanted to just ask all of you a question around what you would, I guess, pull out as being the most notable differences that you found quite interesting comparing those different global markets, the ones you've worked in, the ones that you maybe had some other experience of, and anything in particular that really kind of stands out in that regard?
I think with Germany in particular, it's important to, as Catherine touched upon, to understand just how big these publishers are. They've got such an incredible reach and they are really established in their own right. So if you're a UK advertiser trying to break into that market, you can't break in through the weight of your name alone, because obviously you're trying to understand a new market that you want to move into. So you have to be able to be more adaptable to how they want to work. You have to be able to put some money behind it. It's important to know that the top German affiliates have pretty significant price tags, and rightfully so. They have such a big reach out there that they can afford to ask for that. So you can't be surprised if they don't want to take full homepage exposure for a percentage increase.
Kind of ties in with what I said earlier with the low cross-border shopping rates. So one of the reasons is because they've got such established websites already for their local brands. So that does almost affect it as well. You're kind of competing against those huge local brands, and you know, you have to think of yourself as the consumer in that market. You know, for us, if we've got a really huge German brand coming into the UK market, we'd be looking at if the delivery and returns is as good as, say, ASOS, for example. So it's just something to kind of put yourself in their shoes a little bit as well. But I think, generally in Germany, in comparison to some of the other markets we work in, it's planning is definitely really key.
Very organised.
Super organised. So kind of last minute changes to, I know it's not always, you can't always tell, but any last minute changes to plans doesn't really sit well. And it's, you know, it's a little bit harder. But I think as well, although some of these are really, really big brands, these voucher sites or cashback and loyalty sites, they might actually have quite a small team. So we've seen that with some of the voucher sites, there's not that many of them working on it, so
I guess
they're kind of juggling loads of brands as well.
If you're working hard to try and cultivate a relationship with them for the first time, then you know, something like a late change or delay or something
can be detrimental.
We've seen it be detrimental, so it's just I guess it's always important that each market, although having like a global strategy is really important, having an overarching idea, it's still making sure you are aware of all the market differences and optimizing where best, because it's definitely not a one size fits all.
I think that's where it is. You can't really underestimate the advantages that you get from giving it that local focus. So you might be able to sort of see, you can see those sales coming through from those countries maybe, but actually if you don't have the focus and the people who are really experts in the, you know, local area, you won't really be able to capitalize on it as much. So having an awareness of sort of those, you know, those local shopping days, like we've all mentioned some examples. I personally had no idea what Click Frenzy was before I was out in Australia. There's like a Vogue online shopping night, which is similar to what Charlotte was talking about Glamour Shopping Day. and just really understanding the importance of those for consumers out there. And with, in terms of dealing with the publishers themselves, I would say that for the Australian market in particular, patience is really key. It is quite a new market out there. There aren't very big teams at all. So even with the biggest publishers, you might only have a team of maximum three people who are looking after all of the affiliate relationships. And that's with, you know, networks and brands directly. So just having that patience. Also, there really aren't the same kind of exposure opportunities as there are in the UK. You know, you're not having those really advanced targeting and all of the conversations that are kind of taking place because we're in such a mature stage of the market. That's not really happening out there yet. So just having that patience and being aware of that is really important.
And I guess also being based, say you're an advertiser in Western Europe or the US or South America or somewhere, and you are wanting to kind of break into that Australian market, then things like time lags are going to be a big issue as well.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds really obvious, but it is actually really important to remember. I was out there for 6 months, and most of the time that I was there, there was a time difference of 11 hours from Sydney to London, which is, it is huge. And you really need to be aware of that, because there really is only sort of a 3-day window midweek where you can have a bit of back and forth. When I say back and forth, I mean day after day, not hour by hour, because that's just impossible. So it's really important to sort of plan ahead because of that, and to just, you know, get things signed off and work a bit quicker. You can't really, if you don't respond to something by sort of your Thursday evening, it's probably not going to be actioned by your Tuesday just because of the time difference. So it's really important to be aware of that and plan.
Yeah, cool. And with that talk of time, I think we are out of it. So thanks for coming in today and discussing all of that. That was really interesting.
Thank you. Thank you for having us. You.
Cheers. I'm here now with Ed Chaput. I was going to say your full name, Ed, but I wasn't sure how to pronounce the last bit.
Give it a go. Yeah. Give it a try.
Ed Chaput de Saint-Onge.
It's pretty good. Is it a Chaput de Saint-Onge?
You say it so much better.
Edward Chaput de Saint-Onge. There you are.
And you are Awin's new global product marketing manager. Is that right?
That's correct. It's been a couple of weeks in the role. Yeah. So moved. I was been a product manager for about 6 years with the company.
Yeah.
And this is a new role that we've created, kind of really representing a need that we have to look into how our products are performing sort of within all our different markets, to understand, you know, actually we've got a lot of great products to really find out, okay, what can help in a market and when do we need to push it out? Mm. So that's really kind of what the role is all about, as well as getting the right communication and the right messaging behind all the products that we can bring to market.
Yeah, well, that's actually, I kind of wanted to ask you about a couple of the current projects that you're working on.
Sure.
And the first, we've just released in the last couple of weeks, I'd say, the voucher attribution tool. So if you could maybe kind of sum up what that's about and what the product does, what the benefits are, and how you can implement it, that kind of thing.
Sure. The voucher attribution tool is, in essence, it's a fairly simple tool. It's an addition to MyOffers, which is our the functionality we have to create voucher codes and to create offers. But what it allows you to do when you're creating a voucher for a publisher is you can say, well, actually, I really want this publisher to own the voucher. And you give them a unique code. And what that means from them owning the voucher is that if that voucher is used in a transaction, that publisher is always going to get the commission. So it'll overlook things like the last click. And the real kind of the reason behind that, I mean, we see it as a great way to really kind of work with influencers and work with perhaps people who are maybe they're a little bit less tech savvy. Maybe the platform that they're operating on actually may not allow affiliate links and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So just by sharing a code, anyone who uses that, anyone that they've influenced, you know, they're going to get rewarded for that.
Yeah, yeah. So how can advertisers and publishers get involved in implementing access in this new facility?
Well, for publishers, they'll need to ask their advertisers and see if it's something that they want to engage on. I say we typically see this as the main use case for really kind of engaging with influencers, but there's no reason why it couldn't be suitable for any one of the publishers, if there's the right opportunity. For advertisers, they need to be using our master tech, and we need to be able to see visibility of sales that are using vouchers. So that can be done through our custom parameters and making sure we can just see when a voucher is used, so we can allot the correct commission at that time. Mm-hmm. So it's a fairly straightforward setup, and if you're already on the master tag, then great, it'll be super super easy. But otherwise, you know, if think some changes will be needed, then it's a case of get in touch with your account contact, and you know, our tech services team are there to handhold you through this and make sure that you can use it.
And so for any of our listeners, our millions and millions of listeners that are tuning in right now, what is the master tag if you're not familiar with that already in a simple kind of description?
The master tag, I suppose it's a small sort of little bit of JavaScript that sits on the advertiser site, and ideally, it's on all the landing pages that people are coming into, and that will kind of kick off the tracking and sort of drop the cookie and make sure that everything's going on. But I suppose alongside that, it makes tracking much more accurate. But we also have a lot of publisher partners that are integrated into the master tag. So, I mean, as you well know, you were from the publisher services team originally.
I was indeed.
And probably raised a lot of these requests for when we see publishers that, you know, have a really good track record of bringing in revenue for customers. They may have their own integration process that needs to be gone through. So we'll integrate them ourselves onto the master tag. And then it means the advertisers, you know, they don't have to go through that tech process. We can, with a click of a button, we can sort of activate that publisher on their site.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of, that's kind of, I suppose, one of the main benefits from it. Alongside that, you know, things like cross-device tracking, having unique voucher codes. These are all things that come from having the master tag. And really it kind of opens you up to taking advantage of our full tracking solution. Yeah. And that's what we'll continue to develop on and improve as well. So there's no time like the present to make sure that you're using the master tag.
Well, I was going to say, because this obviously leads quite nicely into another update that's going to be coming out of the network pretty much imminently as we speak. And that's to do with, talking of tracking, the update from Apple and their kind of browsing facilities as well.
Indeed, yes. So the changes that quite a few people may have heard about it, the Safari ITP 2.0.
ITP standing for?
Intelligent Tracking Prevention.
Uh-huh.
It's a bit of a shake-up, I suppose, for the industry. And it's come off the back of, I think security in itself is something that users are more and more concerned with the likes of, recent thing, Cambridge Analytica, doing all sorts of naughtiness with people's data. It's much more kind of, on the forefront of people's minds. In essence, ITP 2.0, it's designed to hinder us sort of tracking user journeys, which is really important for the affiliate industry. However, our full tracking solution, advertisers using the master tag won't be affected by this. So as long as our advertisers are using that full tracking suite that we offer, then there shouldn't be any issue whatsoever, and the publishers will continue to see their sales running through, and advertisers will continue to see them tracking. Most of our advertisers are using the master tag, but at the same time, we do have some advertisers who are still on the legacy tracking. So we're having a real push internally to engage with these advertisers and sort of see if we can get them to make that change and to upgrade to kind of the full tracking suite and really take advantage of, not just being able to track on Safari when these changes come in, which we're guessing September, October. It's a bit of a mystery. But also it's the other benefits that come with that. And we've mentioned some of them. Yeah. So the publishers you can work with the click of a button, the other elements of tracking that you can then start using. And it just gives you a wider variety of potential strategic pieces you can use your account. You have more options, more things to play with.
Yeah. So presumably we've got an update coming out, as we mentioned earlier. Where can readers and listeners kind of find out more about this and the network's kind of take on it?
Yeah, well, we'll be releasing that out. Depending on how quick it takes us to edit this podcast, it may already be with our millions of listeners. But we'll be pushing something out to publishers. We'll be pushing something out to advertisers. We'll also be making sure that all our internal staff are aware of the issues, aware of what we're doing. And we have our task force internally to really help manage this process and then engage directly with advertisers that could be the most effective from this, that are on legacy tracking, to really kind of upgrade them and move them across so they won't have that effect. Likewise, as we're going through that, I think if any advertisers have concerns, then by all means, it's a case of reaching out to your account contact, reaching out to technical services so you can understand exactly what tracking am I on, what can I do to change it, and giving yourself enough time to be able to make those changes.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, thanks for popping in, Ed, and good luck in the new role.
Thank you ever so much. It's been a pleasure.
I'm sure we'll get you back in at some point in the future as well.
I look forward to it.
I will say your name correctly that time as well.
Fantastic. Great.
Cheers, Ed.
Thank you ever so much.
So that's all we've got time for this month. Before we go, though, I did want to point out a few upcoming events to look out for. So between July 29th and 31st, we have Affiliate Summit East, which is a huge affiliate conference taking place in New York. Awin's very own Janine Crooks will be appearing on a panel there called The 7 Keys to Successful Affiliate Marketing. So if you're planning to attend the conference, do make sure you make it over to that particular session. Talking of huge digital marketing conferences, Demexco is due to take place this year on September 12th and 13th, and Awin will have a big stand there, so come over and say hello. I believe that's taking place in Cologne, in Germany again. And Awin also has a series of local events coming up in Poland, Sweden, and Switzerland as well. So stay tuned for more details on those events in coming episodes of the podcast. And finally, I'd just like to give a little mention for an upcoming event, which is more of a fundraiser, actually. I've got a personal investment in this particular one because it's the Awin London to Paris bike ride that's taking place at the start of September. We're cycling, there's about 20 of us all together that are going to be cycling 180 miles from London to Paris, raising money for the mental health charity Mind. It's by far the biggest distance that most, if not all of us, have ever ridden before. And we're supposed to be doing it within 24 hours as well. So it's going to be a pretty tough challenge. We've got a 9 grand fundraising target to get to. And so far, I believe we've only raised about 3% of that. So we could really do with your help. I'm looking at you, Craig, and Kevin as well. So there'll be more details on the AWIN blog in the UK on that particular fundraising challenge. And if you can donate any small amount of money towards that particular campaign, then we would obviously be extremely grateful. Thank you. So that's it for this month's episode. Thanks for joining us, and I hope you enjoyed it. We'll tune in again next month when we'll have another set of interviews and discussions on all of the latest news from across the affiliate and digital advertising industry. In the meantime, though, it's goodbye from me. It's goodbye from Craig.
Goodbye.
And goodbye from Kev.
Goodbye.
Thanks, and goodbye.